Hey, Cyber listeners, Matthew here. This episode is supported by Code Comments, an original podcast from Red Hat. You know, when you're working on a project and you leave behind a small note in the code, a code comment, to help others learn what isn't clear in the code? This podcast features technologists who've been through tech transitions and share how their teams survived the journey. There's a lot of work required to bring a project from purchase to production, and the documentation doesn't cover changing team dynamics. The host, Jamie Parker, is a Red Hatter and an experienced engineer. In each episode, Jamie recounts the stories of experienced technologists from across the industry who share what they've learned from implementing new technology. Episodes are available anywhere you listen to podcasts and at redhat.com/codecommentspodcast. I listened to Season 2, Episode 5, You Can't Automate the Difficult Decisions, which is all about security and automating security and AI and security. It was pretty fascinating. Did you know that 52% of companies are sacrificing security for speed? I didn't until I listened to this podcast. So should you automate security? What can you get away with automating? Should you shift security to the left, as they say? Well, take a listen.
On the surface, security seems like an obvious candidate for automation. IT systems are complex conglomerations of components, most of which are potential vectors for attack. Proper configuration, constant vigilance, and rapid response are essential elements of an effective security system. Automation helps security teams be more effective with those and more. And yet, when security is an afterthought, or even just considered late in the development cycle, the odds of avoidable, catastrophic breaches go up. But solutions have been difficult to implement. In this episode, we hear from a security advocate at Microsoft about her effort to better integrate security into development processes. Prioritizing security is a tough balancing act. How do you keep your system secure without excessively slowing down development? The struggle over cybersecurity is a constant back and forth, and automation is an absolutely essential component. Let's imagine you're leading the development of a new project.
I've already mentioned to your stakeholders that you're supposed to deliver a particular system by, let's say, 30th September. So you can imagine what happens if by the 29th of September, you identify a critical security vulnerability. And then the security team goes ahead and tells the senior leadership team that this product cannot go live with this critical security vulnerability. So what do you do? Do you sacrifice your profits because of security?
What would you do? The knee-jerk reaction may be to say delay the project and secure your systems, but there's a lot that goes into that decision. How likely is a breach? How much leeway do you have with the deadline? Are there other solutions available? It's not an easy decision to make.
We're still seeing 52% of companies actually still sacrifice cybersecurity for speed.
That's a lot. It's higher than it probably should be. Joylynn Kirui is a senior cloud security advocate at Microsoft, and she's trying to turn that situation around. But let's flip that statistic. 48% of companies are prioritizing cybersecurity over speed. Given the frequency and severity of security breaches that reach the news, that's encouraging. While Joylynn is currently on the forefront of the effort to improve cybersecurity, that wasn't always the case.
I actually got hacked. So prior to getting into cybersecurity, I was a software developer, and I used to develop several systems for some companies here in Kenya. And then actually, at that time, very many developers, I wasn't considering security at all when I was developing.
That was a turning point in Joylynn's career. She took it upon herself to learn about information security, or InfoSec, and incorporate it into her own coding, eventually turning to security as her full-time focus. But one shudders to think of the extent to which security is not considered.
44% of developers are still not yet trained to code securely.
Oh, yeah, that's not great. And it's not an easy problem to solve. Joylynn shared with us a common refrain in the InfoSec community. Security experts need to be lucky all the time. Hackers only need to get lucky once. Recruiting developers to help improve system security from the outset seems like a simple improvement, but reality is rarely that simple.
So you see, yes, you still get the pushback from developers because they're like, why should they care? They are paid to develop while you're adding more tasks to them.
Training takes time. Developers may feel like they already have enough to do to get their thing to work at all, without also having to consider how someone else is going to try and break the system and bring the whole thing crashing down. For a long time, and for too many organizations, the relationships between developers, operations, and security teams have been contentious.
Traditionally, when you're having waterfall teams or agile teams, what would happen is the developers would create a minimum viable product. And then after they develop that, it goes to the security team. And then the security team does security reviews, generates a whole report, and then sends this back to the developers. So there used to be a lot of back and forth between developers and security teams until all the security vulnerabilities are fixed.
That back and forth takes time. Depending on the company's processes and the severity of the issues discovered, that time going back and forth can cause frustration, resentment, and delays. If only there was a way to avoid the angry game of ping pong.
So by implementing security automation within the developer's environment, so if we can identify 80% of those security vulnerabilities from the developer's IDE, we will be narrowing down or reducing the time to delivery by reducing the back and forth between the developer team and the security team.
Automation can help catch a lot of the easy issues early on. That way, developers can fix them quickly and on their own. It's a little more work up front for a lot of time saved and frustration avoided later on. Joylin and security teams in general aren't there to maliciously slow people down. It's quite the opposite. They're there to deter malice, but they can't do it alone.
It's usually a lot of negotiation between the teams. Like, what other safeguards can be put in place to help support the business? Because in my opinion, security is there to support the business and we shouldn't be blockers in that way. We should see ways of being supportive. But if there are no ways of safeguarding, then yes, we'd have to delay the delivery of the product. But yes, so we're still seeing 57% of operations teams are still pushing back on security best practices.
By now, most people have heard of DevOps, the merging of developer and operations teams and processes, breaking down the silos, promoting communication and cooperation. And the end result is everyone is able to do their jobs better. Wait, everyone? No, not everyone. Not yet.
So you're always developing within a period of time, pushing to the market, and then always building on top of that product and pushing a particular solution. So that's a form of automation. But yes, we noticed that, yes, we are pushing many solutions very fast, but we're also pushing security incidents and vulnerabilities very fast as well. So that's why it was very important for what we call DevSecOps or shifting security left to come in place.
Enter DevSecOps, the movement to include security earlier on in the development process and build on the success of DevOps processes. In a project's timeline, this is shifting security to the left. Automation, like security plugins included in IDEs, plays a big role in making DevSecOps possible. Automation also helps security teams monitor production environments, flag any suspicious activity, and quickly coordinate with developers and operations team on addressing any issues, in theory anyways.
It's not all benefits, for sure. We still see teams still working in silos. The development team, they have their own agenda. They want to push as many features as possible. And then the security team is there telling them that all these features need to be reviewed for security vulnerabilities. So yes, the whole aspect of DevSecOps is just, as I showed you, like, it's just more of a culture change.
Automations to make work easier and faster only go so far on their own. It's difficult to overcome entrenched culture, expectations, and goals. And that's not to say automation isn't a huge help to security teams. It makes penetration testing, for one, much more efficient.
In the offensive side, we try to automate as much as possible because it might take many, 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 many days to triage systems, to identify the vulnerabilities. So we also have automation to see if it identifies a particular vulnerability, it goes further to try and exploit it. So if I do it manually, it will take me like a couple of days. But if we have some bit of automation, it may take a couple of hours.
Going from days to hours to complete these tests is no small improvement. Penetration testing is mimicking what an intruder might attempt, and they likely have access to their own automation systems. The faster you can find those vulnerabilities, the better chance you have of addressing them before someone else takes advantage.
By using programmatic solutions, you can be able to identify these threats for an organization's security posture, and it also helps in performing triaging of these security attacks and setting also a priority level on those security attacks. And then in some cases, it also responds to them in return. So they have visibility of all these logs in one place. Then now they can be able to do incident response, incident handling as well, to see what is the extent of damage of a particular attack towards your environment, towards your ecosystem.
When we come back, we dig into the balancing act that security teams need to perform when rolling out automations to help improve security. Remember that statistic from the start of the show? 52% of companies are sacrificing security for speed. Delaying the project may not be a viable option for many, but leaving your systems completely vulnerable to a critical security vulnerability isn't really either, even if that vulnerability might never be exploited, if you're lucky. There are, thankfully, other options available.
There's many ways around that as well. In some cases, you would think of ways of mitigating. So by mitigating, I don't mean like fixing the security vulnerability at once. It's just more of putting more layers of security around that in terms of blocking it from being exploited. So by blocking it from being exploited, it can also be from the defensive side of security.
Those layers of security, especially for the increasingly distributed cloud environments, rely on a host of available automations. As Joylyn mentioned earlier, those include IDE plugins that scan the code as it's being written.
You can be able to even go in and just search for security, and then you'll see all the security plugins that are available for you to just install, and then it scans against your code base for security vulnerabilities. And then you also have like pre-commit hooks. It prevents you from committing your code. For example, if it detects that you have secrets in your code, if it identifies that you have security vulnerabilities as well, it will prevent you from merging or pushing your code or commissioning your code until you've fixed all those security vulnerabilities.
Here's where things can get a little dicey. The goal of these automations is to address potential security issues early and avoid that angry game of ping pong. When it works as intended, everyone is happy. But if those plugins are too aggressive or not tuned properly, they can end up creating problems that weren't there. One such problem is the possible prevalence of false positives.
I've seen scenarios whereby they deployed a particular tool. It had very many false positives. So they were taking up a lot more time trying to fix those false positives than the time it took for them to actually build the code itself. So you can imagine that's just wastage of resources.
Imagine you're working on your code. You're getting ready to send it off to get deployed, and you get 100 errors indicating potential vulnerabilities. As you're going through the list, you realize about 30 of them aren't actually a problem because the issue's already been addressed. That's not a great experience.
Because we're supposed to be there to make it easier for developers. We need to make sure that the tools that we're deploying to developers are geared to their needs, and they are not stopping their developer velocity as well.
False positives are unfortunately fairly common, especially when first integrating security automations into your work processes. Tuning those systems is an expected process. Over time, their prevalence should decrease. Just be careful of overtuning and making it too lax, or you could risk allowing false negatives through.
Security absolutely prefers no false negatives and more false positives.
With false positives, your system flags an issue that's already been addressed. With false negatives, your system fails to flag an issue altogether. It may be addressed, but it may not be. If it's not, and the code goes to production, you're vulnerable, and you don't know it. That's the scary scenario. How does that happen?
It's probably something that went wrong with the automation or the way the tool was automated. Because remember, this one is trying to get all the security vulnerabilities by running particular rules or by running particular, so you have like a particular database of security vulnerabilities and then it's running against your code base to see if it will actually match that behavior. So in some cases, if a tool is not mature and not tested as much, then yes, you'll see a lot of false negatives as well as false positives.
Too many false positives, and your developers may, perhaps rightfully, revolt. Any false negatives, and some hacker could get lucky and break through. It's not a situation with quick and easy solutions. Finding that balance will take time. Tuning your security automations is an expected part of the process. Off-the-shelf solutions are a template to adapt to your own system. First step, determine if it's a good fit in the first place. Do you need the features included? Is the system worth taking the time to adapt to yours?
So that's why it's very important. Before you procure or you decide on a particular product, it's very important for you to do a POC, a proof of concept, just for you to understand if it meets your requirements, if it has false positives, if it has false negatives. By running it against your repositories, just to understand the behavior and also reading what other people saying about a particular tool. So it's very important for you to do your due diligence.
Once you determine if it's the right tool for the job, you can start on the process of integrating it into your workflows.
The security and development team, they have to do what you call like DevSecOps maturity. In some cases, you get a tool off the shelf like that, and you integrate it within your environment and just use it as is. In these cases, you will find a lot of false positives.
So how do we get those numbers down?
You have to take some time to understand the behavior of the product and tweak the scripts for it to work within your environment to reduce the number of false positives. So yes, you have to do a lot of research and go through the maturity to make sure that your adoption is well matured.
Got it. Research, understand, adjust, repeat. This is such a common process that there's a formal framework that's been developed to determine how mature your DevSecOps automation system is.
So within DevSecOps, like OWASP have a framework called the DevSecOps Maturity Model. It categorizes your DevSecOps maturity from level 1 to level 4. So by the time you reach DevSecOps maturity level 4, you have like very few like false positives. The tool is very mature and it's working within your environment. The scripts are running very well. So yes, you have to take time just to do your automation very well and making sure that it's meeting your requirements.
We talk a lot on this show about how automation, at its most effective, is an ongoing process rather than one or a collection of one-off projects. That's especially true in security. Even when you hit that high maturity level, when the DevSecOps team is synergizing and firing on all cylinders, you can't rest on your laurels.
So even if you're putting all these security measures, for sure, there's nothing that's 100% secure. If someone wants to get in, they will get in. It's just a matter of time.
You'll never be 100% secure. But with a little help from automation, you can even the odds and avoid becoming an easy target. Next time on Code Comments, we hear from an automation expert at Discover who helped them consolidate their automation efforts, all the while navigating internal politics and the constraints of operating in a financial institution.
Search for Code Comments in your podcast player. We'll also include a link in the show notes. My thanks to Code Comments for their support.
Transitioning to a decarbonized economy sounds like just one change. In fact, this shift requires several transitions across sectors, geographies, and timelines. In Talking Transitions, a new podcast brought to you by the EY organization and Foresight Climate and Energy, we look at how the transition is affecting three key areas: energy, financial services, and government. The Talking Transitions podcast is out now. Download today from wherever you get your podcasts, or visit talkingtransitions.com to find out more.